Okay, so which one of you is going to resign first, given that it seems to be the week of resignations?
Well, in good conscience, I can no longer work with either of you two, so I'm out.
Okay. Okay, I'm and hit. In good conscience, I can work with neither of you two either.
I have no conscience, so I'm happy to sit here and take all the sponsorship money.
Go now, Jeff. Go now.
All the sponsorship money? All of it?
All of it. Every last penny.
You're listening to the Host Unknown podcast.
Hello, hello, hello. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening from wherever you are joining us. And welcome to episode 111-ish of the Host Unknown podcast.
I was waiting for you to say
something there, Andy. There we go.
I was on mute. I put my mic on mute to cough.
On mute. It's so 2020, mate. I mean, come on. It's so passé now, darling.
Oh dear.
Oh yes, indeed. 111. So Jav, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. It's a nice Friday, so sun's out, and I can't complain. Well, I can because I'm talking to you two, but I won't.
Yeah, absolutely. And what's your week been? You did a little bit of traveling earlier.
Yes. I've been for a while. It's been on my bucket list to get a investment property of some sort. So I've been traveling the country looking for someone that will sell me something for like 10 grand or 15 grand or something. I think I'm
so you've been
close.
Going north, basically.
Yeah, further and further on each trip. But with the rising cost of petrol, it's like turning out to be cheaper if I just like fly there or take the train, actually.
Or just hand over the extra 10 grand. So yeah. Where have you narrowed your sights to, or is that still sort of Jav TBC. Confidential?
It's to be decided, really. Whoever accepts my lowball offers, really.
Are you going to become a landlord or an Airbnb host?
Or hostess. We don't discriminate.
I don't think I'm brave enough to...
No, this is true.
Yeah. I'm initially just landlording in the traditional sense, I think.
So like screwing tenants, taking their sort of DSS and sort of not fixing leaks and having mould on the walls.
Well, I mean, it fits with everything else. He doesn't do anything around here either.
I mean, what are they going to do? Leave me a bad review? I mean...
Well, with all the others, I mean, it's like they're going to stick out. And if you've just joined us, this is Host Unknown, Homes Under the Hammer podcast.
Oh, dear.
So all you need, Jav, to be a landlord is you need a sheepskin jacket, a jag, and two dogs so you can walk around telling them everybody that you owe them, that they owe you rent. And you'll be fine. You know, that's your, landlord starter kit.
Fantastic. Great advice. I should have come to you before I even went and went in here. There's low ball office.
You didn't rock up with your jag, did you?
No, I didn't. Okay, cool.
Anyway, Andy, how are you? What have you been up to?
Been working hard. It's,
hardly working, am I right?
Or hardly working. what was it you were saying? Are you incompetently competent or competently incompetent?
This is the thing of starting a new job, and you start off as unconsciously incompetent, i.e. you don't know that you're bad at the job, and then you become consciously incompetent, you know that you've got a lot to learn, then you become consciously competent, i.e. you have to work hard to be competent, and then finally you become unconsciously competent, where actually it's second nature. So where are you on that scale?
I would say I'm definitely at the early stages of this journey. it's one of those, am I going to make it to the finish line? I do not know. That whole never be the smartest person in the room? Yeah. Just for once, I would love that. You know, I just need a little bit of a...
You need an edge.
I just need a morale booster, right? It's like, help me out. Just give me something. Learning lots of things. It's... So I've moved to a company which is a specialist risk management company. And, you know, I've always been on the side of managing risk and being able to contribute something. But now, you know, walking into a room with other experts, you know, who are far more qualified in that field than I am, it does feel like I'm just, you know, kind of that guy that walks around the building site with a clipboard and just ticks things.
Yeah.
Yep, you got a bucket, you got a hard hat on. Yep, good.
are you the guy in the suit with a hard hat on at the building site who points at the plan and then points at the building and then points at the plan and points at the building?
Exactly. I just need to you know, start writing things down on that plan and contributing a bit more. But hopefully it will come. It's lots to do and very smart. But in the meantime, I'm learning lots, right? That's the most important thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, you know, a lot of these smart people, if there's anything we've learned from this current government, that we shouldn't always trust these so-called experts, you know, and leaders in the field to know what they're talking about, right? So, I mean, I'm sure there's something you can add to that.
Yeah. But alas, how's your week? You're not too far ahead of me in terms of new jobs.
No.
Consciously incompetent?
3 months on Monday just gone. So, where am I? I'm not even going to suggest in case I don't make it through to the next payroll, you know. Just been bitten.
The life of a CISO.
Exactly. So... a couple of nice breakthroughs this week. Actually, I was on the call to somebody, and we're talking about whatever it was we were talking about, and he said, "Yeah, and then we're going to feed everything into Dave's new risk register." And it took me a second. It's like Dave's new risk register. That's the thing I kicked off 2 months ago because we didn't have anything, and now everybody's.
Now you realise that everyone calls you Dave.
Yeah. No, but it was kind of like, that's great. It's being circulated. People are knowing about this and want to now contribute to it. So it's one of those, you know, the circle is kind of closing on itself in a good way. So that was nice. That was really good. So shall we see what's coming up on this week's show? This Week in InfoSec reminds us of Loft Heavy Industries. Rant of the Week brings us a brazen employee. Billy Big Balls is a game changer for Apple device owners. Industry News brings us the latest greatest security news stories from around the world. And Tweet of the Week is the story of a 10-year email thread. So let's move on to our favourite part of the show, the part of the show that we like to call...
This Week in InfoSec.
It is that part of the show where we take a stroll down InfoSec memory lane with royalty-free soundtrack and content liberated from the Today in InfoSec Twitter account and further afield. So our first story takes us back a mere 11 years when on this day, the 8th of July 2011, Space Rogue broadcast the final HNN cast. And with that, the Hacker News Network came to an end. So for those who do not know their history, Space Rogue, a.k.a. Chris Thomas, was a founding member of the hacker think tank Loft Heavy Industries. So he was the first of Loft's members to leave following the merger of Loft with At Stake in 2000. And he was also the last to reveal his true name. So he was one of seven Loft members who testified before the US Senate Committee on Governmental Affairs in 1999. And he testified under his internet handle, Space Rogue. And it was his testimony and that of other Loft members that served to inform the government of the current and future internet vulnerabilities to which federal and public channels were susceptible. So they specifically warned of internet vulnerabilities, claiming that they could take down the internet within 30 minutes, for which obviously the Senate paid great attention to. And their testimony marked the first time that persons not under federal witness protection were permitted to testify under assumed names.
Beforehand, did they sort of like, what are you going to call yourself? I don't know. What are you going to call yourself? I don't know. Just put two random words together. Or, Xanthor the Destroyer. Or
back then, I think everyone sort of went by internet handles then, right? You know, it sort of came from the IRC days or, bulletin boards. And
What were your internet handles?
I had many.
So Jester being one of them.
No, I didn't actually add the Sir part until maybe 1999. Prior to that, it was just Jester.
Well, you hadn't accomplished so much by that point. Either.
Exactly, yeah, I hadn't done too much. But yeah, no, it wasn't until maybe 98, I think. Yeah, just before I... Yeah.
What about you, Jav? What was your nom de plume?
Oh, none of them I can remember are suitable for...
Big Dick 69.
No. I've never been into false advertising.
Adequately sized dick 68.
Room for improvement.
Grower, not a shower.
Anyway, with DVA, so Loft Heavy Industries, they created the Hacker News Network website in 1998, and their goal was to publicise security stories, which they believe should have been better publicised, as well as, you know, call out inaccuracies in mainstream reporting. You know, we've seen many examples of this and sort of sensationalism in the past, and they were the authoritative place to get your accurate security news from, you know, by the late 90s. But when they were acquired by AtStake in 2000, AtStake essentially shut down the Hacker News Network because they had to find a balance between, you know, sort of providing this free educational service to the community and not pissing off their commercial customers who were paying for their services.
We're not touching that with a 12-foot barge pole.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, in the spring of 2009, Space Rogue did restart HNN, and he continued to run it for another 2.5 years until it came to its end in July of 2011.
Wow. Why did he give up, do you know?
It basically became too much effort to run. So, you know, with the, I guess, researching stories, editing, and all of that, you know, he's saying he's sort of spending 40 to 50 hours a week on it.
Crikey.
You know, side gig.
I thought this was bad enough in the hour I have to spend with you guys, but blimey.
Well, exactly. And as well, funny, right? Has it been an hour or has it been more? Are we on episode? Yeah, we started this show on episode 115. What people don't know, this now turned into episode 116, but we can talk about that another time.
112.
Yeah. but alas, I'm going to just quickly move on to our second story, which takes us back long before I was born, which is a mere 43 years to the 1st of July 1979, when the first Sony Walkman, the TPSL2, went on sale in Japan. Wow. And it went on sale in the US a year later, but obviously by allowing owners to sort of carry their personal music with them. The Walkman and their iconic headphones introduced a revolution in listening habits and popular culture.
So I remember, you know, the knockoffs that came out in the late 80s and things like that. And I've actually got one of the more modern Sony Walkman cassette players in my drawer, because I bought it back when I unearthed a Spectrum 48K. Remember those?
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
And in fact, we gave this particular one away as a prize at a conference, as I recall.
Yes. Yeah.
And I wanted to sort of bring it back to life and have a go with it, etc. And I bought some old tapes. I think it was Jet Set Willy and I can't remember the other one. Anyway, a couple of tapes. And so I thought I'd buy a Sony Walkman to play the tapes into it. Do you know what? It wouldn't work. The gain was not high enough for it to work. So in the end, I downloaded an app onto my iPhone, an iPhone 4, which simulated that. And so I got a photo somewhere of a Spectrum and an iPhone connected with an audio cable with the iPhone feeding the program into the Spectrum. It's like...
Jeez.
A real sort of contrast of technology there, you know, one slave into the other. It was the wrong way round, you know. But yeah, so it was, the whole Walkman thing just is really good. I've still got cassette tapes in now that are on the shelf somewhere.
But yeah, but if you think, you know, the mini disc came out as well, you know, after that with its anti-skip technology, right?
So you, and the CDs.
No one could jog with it or anything. Yeah, and the CDs, yeah. Yeah. And then,
Yeah, oh, the CDs were
Well, terrible. That was the problem, though, wasn't it? It's that the CDs, they would skip as you were walking.
You
know, but then they came up with anti-skip technology on those as well.
Yeah, but, all that meant was it just paused for, you know, 2 seconds while
it was... never as good. I mean, like, the Walkman, the original tape was just so good. It was, like, durable. You didn't have to worry about dust and scratches like you did on the CD. And it was just so easy to record, like, you know, when like, end of the year or something, they, you know, Capitol used to do the top 100 songs of the year. You could sit there and record them off your stereo and... Having your own mixtapes so easily.
Making mixtapes for your, you know, the love of your life at the time.
Yeah.
Obviously not. Obviously not.
No. It was more, sorry, Tate. I remember doing like a... No, I'm not even going to go into it. after an emotional breakup, I remember the Pasadena's I'm Doing Fine Now sort of on loop for... along with, who was the other one? King of Wishful Thinking.
You know, for the longest time, there was a David Bowie track that, you know, has some quite sort of atmospheric kind of crackling in it and all that sort of thing. 10 years later, I found out it's because the tape was crinkled. When I listened to the original, I think it was on a CD, it was like, hang on, where's the crackly bit?
What's this edit? Yeah,
yeah, exactly. And because it was at the remastered. Beginning, it was in the first track, when you turned it over, the album had finished, so you didn't hear it on the other side, if you see what I mean. So, yeah, 10 years. 10 years just because of that one crackly tape. Anyway, excellent. Lovely trip down memory lane there. Thank you, Andy, for this week's...
This week in InfoCert.
This is the podcast the Queen listens to, although she won't admit it.
So let's move on, shall we, to the blood-boiling part of the show, the part of the show that we like to call...
Listen up!
Rant of the Week.
It's time to motherfucking rage!
So you'd think that... you know, any company that's dealing in sensitive information, you know, such as vulnerabilities and bug reports and all that sort of thing, they'd have their security locked up tight. And you're right, you know, this particular company, HackerOne, they absolutely do. They are a very reputable company, very open, honest, trustworthy, etc. Unfortunately, the same cannot be said for one of their most recent employees. This particular employee joined on April the 4th of this year and was let go as recently as June 23rd. That was only about two and a half months or so. And in that time, this particular person was a bit of a scoundrel, to say the least. So if you don't know what HackerOne does, they are a bug bounty company. So if you're a company that wants to outsource your bug bounty program, i.e. outsource the ability for security researchers around the world to test your platform, test your website, test your software product, and then get paid for any vulnerabilities that are found, this is what HackerOne does. They handle all of that for you. They handle all the payments and you just pay HackerOne directly, so you don't have to worry about it. This is all great because security researchers just put their findings. They look on the HackerOne website, they download, you know, what work is available to look at, and they start their research. And if they find something, they upload it. Well, this particular employee, who, as it turns out, has another name of Rizzler, R-Z-L-R. This particular person, who was on the inside of HackerOne, was taking these reports that were coming in from genuine security researchers who were expecting to be paid for it, and then contacting the company directly and saying, "Hey, look what I found. Do you want to give me some money for this?" basically stealing other people's work and passing it off as their own. And we all knew a kid like that at school, right?
So this guy's basically, what you're saying is he's got CISO potential.
Absolutely. In fact, Andy and I have got a friend now who does that, right?
Yeah, this is true.
Yeah. So this person did this 7 times in this 2.5 month period. I mean, that's like once every 10 days or so, something like that. Absolutely shocking. Presumably they were background checked and all that sort of thing. But it really, the amount of time they were in this, this person came in with a premeditated idea, I think, of what they were going to do. They were going to gather as much money as they could and then just leg it. And probably, like so many of these genius criminals, got a bit greedy, thought this was a bit too easy and stayed a little bit too long. And it was only found out when a customer requested an investigation of a suspicious vulnerability disclosure through this, you know, through a direct channel rather than from HackerOne directly. And it basically matched up with one that had already been submitted. So, yeah, absolutely shocking. When I was given the choice to do, you know, this or another story, this one just made my blood boil straight away. Just appalling, appalling. And thank goodness for the criminal minds who keep screwing it up. And also, well done, HackerOne, for disclosing it and being open and honest about it. In fact, Andy, you and I were talking about this before, and you know they've done a bang up job on this.
Yeah.
They?
Well, especially, I mean, the whole model is based on trust, right? And they
Yeah.
Fair play to them.
Yeah. This is even better than the time that they helped criminals launder money through an unofficial ransom disguise bounty. So, but bang on job. Well
missed
done.
A long oh, sorry. Memory oh, there.
Well, sorry, were you going to ask them for sponsorship?
Well, were you?
Cut this part out.
Were you? Let's ask them for HackerOne. If you're listening, please join us. Come on the show. It'll only cost you, you know, 4 figures, and we can hear all about the story.
Yeah. And what is it? Bug Crowd, if you want to sponsor us, if you want
you
to hear
just
more
need
of
to
my...
do a few higher figures, and we'll get you on first.
Yeah,
exactly.
And we'll even say stuff about HackerOne for you. Like, yeah. We'll read it from a script.
Yeah, that's right.
We take all the liability, so you don't have to.
Yeah. We're like Nigel Farage. We'll just read anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, excellent. So, yeah, well done, HackerOne. And boo, hiss, shame on you, Mr. Rizzler. Or Mr. The Rizzler. And that was this week's...
Rant of the Week. Feeling overloaded with actionable information?
Yup.
Fed up receiving well-researched, factual security content? Yeah. Ask your doctor if the Host Unknown podcast is right for you.
Always read the label, never double dose on episodes. Side effects may include nausea, eye rolling, and involuntary swearing in anger.
True story.
I love that jingle.
Oh, yeah, so I really like the music on that one. Right, sorry, it's down to me now, isn't it? Yeah, we've got to keep the show moving on. I'm too busy looking at the notes and the added notes that have been put in there since our little recording faux pas earlier that hopefully nobody noticed. So let's move on to another faux pas and jav, and this week's...
You know what, Tom? I don't know what I do to deserve this. I'm so nice to you.
Oh.
I you know, I'm not even like... thrown you under the bus today or disagreed with you too much, and like this is what I get, and then you wonder why I'm mean to you.
I love the caveat. I haven't even disagreed with you too much.
Yet, too well, obviously.
Yet.
Yet. Exactly.
So our Billy Big Balls off the week goes to Apple, and Tim
of
Apple
course.
Has some kahunas. So you know how it is. People's whole lives revolve around their phones these days. It's everything's on there. You can't even go and get a paper ticket from a parking machine anymore. You have to do it through an app. So
that's
everything's
so frustrating.
It's kind of all right, because if you don't have change, which I never do. Hold on, sorry, my phone's ringing. I forgot to put it on silent. No, and that's not an invitation for you to start phoning me, Andy, which is something you always do. Yeah, so our whole life is on the phone. Everything's there. But it's also a treasure trove of information for criminals, bad guys out there. They can... thanks, then. He's phoning me up now. Before I had a chance to put my watch on mute. I put my phone on mute, but not my watch. So, everything's on your phone. Your whole life's there. But there is a lot of information that can be misused, and that's not just from advertisers or people with bad...
Jeff, can you answer your phone, please, mate?
No, I can hear it come through the sound right now. But you've reached the O2 messaging service. Okay, so Apple have announced... My God, you know what? I can hear it ringing in the in my
headphones. I know, because I'm holding it up.
Yeah, why?
Oh, okay. We're just trying to show your incompetence.
Oh, really? And this is the best way you could think of it.
This is a deflection technique, nothing else.
Yeah. Apple know that their phones are very popular. They've gone on the privacy bandwagon for a while. They're saying, like, buy iPhones, we take your privacy seriously. But criminals also know that, and there have been many targeted attempts against individuals based on their phones. So if you know their geolocation, you can use that to do a drone strike. If you are, that NSO group, then the Pegasus spyware also can affect iPhones and give away all your information, trade secrets, and whatever. Who wants to go up against corrupt governments, dodgy regimes, and fancy state-backed software manufacturers whose whole job is to break into phones? Well, Apple. And they've announced a new security feature known as lockdown mode, which will roll out with iOS 16 to protect high-risk individuals like human rights defenders, journalists, and dissidents against targeted spyware attacks. So I assume you just, like, you know, you can be running down the road being chased by Agent Smith, and you pull out your phone and say, Siri, enable lockdown mode. And all of a sudden, enabling lockdown mode. And like all the shutters come down. And yeah. If you could add some sound effects in the background, Tom, that would be great.
Does it flood enabled all your chats with memes? So they, they can't find anything.
Yes, we call it the Andy feature. So the lockdown mode, you can still use messaging, web browsing, and...
You can still use it as a phone, basically, can't you?
Yeah. But there are some connectivity protections designed to block mercenary spyware used by government-backed hackers to monitor their Apple devices after infecting them with malware. Attackers attempt to compromise Apple devices using zero-click exploits targeting messaging apps such as WhatsApp or Facebook or web browsers will get automatically blocked, seeing what vulnerable features the link previews will be disabled. So this is really, really good. I think it's one that's almost like auto sandboxing everything. Yeah. What I was wondering is that this is a really good feature now for, you know, people who are valuing their OPSEC, like journalists or what have you. But I think, you know, more and more of these features might even creep into the standard build of an iPhone, that, you know, the way they're going with, like, do not track and everything. I think this is a really good, you know, general security feature. I mean, like, why, you know, and I say this as a being employed by a security awareness vendor, if you can have it so that the phone doesn't allow you to click on something it got compromised, you don't need to then train the user, don't click on a link, or here's how you check out what's dodgy. If your security software can do that for you itself and just prevent it, I think that could be really, really useful. But
I'll just add, because I don't think it's got enough coverage, is that Apple have also doubled their bounty program.
I was just about to say exactly
for
that.
For any sort of findings in lockdown mode. And they go up to a maximum of $2 million if you find a vulnerability with their lockdown mode.
Because it's a million in anything else, but if it's to do with lockdown mode, it's $2 million,
yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Do you think Rizzler submitted a bug bounty for that?
Yeah,
I don't think anyone else has done it yet.
The problem was the evidence he provided was paper thin.
Damn.
Let's roll that story up now. Anyway.
Oh, good.
I think it's a really good feature. And I think we need more of these features natively in these devices. Yeah. And I think you probably will. I think even maybe like corporate issued devices might even be something like this. It's like, here's a brand new iPhone. By the way, we disabled everything you might find useful on it except for work. You know, it's sort of like a better MDM.
But if this is something that can also be triggered remotely as well, it means that if, you know, a company's SOC is seeing that somebody's being targeted, etc., they can trigger this without the user, you know, having to do anything, in the sense that, you know, the user might not know they're being attacked because it's, you know, quite surreptitious and behind the scenes. But if the SOC finds it, boom, they can lock it all down. And they're securing all the endpoints, not just, you know, the standard laptop, etc.
Good point. So, you know, you see, you can track your employee to say, oh, they're entering a dodgy country.
Yeah.
Let's just enable lockdown mode as they go through customs, and you know, good luck with trying to get any data off it.
Well, people often say that you should, you know, get a brand new device when you go to China and things like that. I guess if you just put it into lockdown mode, it would be the same thing, effectively, wouldn't it?
No, I mean, what they'll do, they'll literally just grab your face, hold it to your phone, use it to unlock Face ID, and then switch
lockdown mode off. Yeah, very true.
But I do love it. I mean, this sounds like such a West Coast, someone in San Francisco thinking of it. Well, you know, these regimes, they can get it. I tell you what, why don't you just buy another £1,500 iPhone and travel?
Yeah.
And then you won't have that problem. You know, genius, Dave. Why didn't I think of that? Good one.
Oh, dear. No, it's good. I think it definitely qualifies for a big ball move, Billy Big Ball's move, because it does put a target on them somewhat. But hopefully it's... Well, hopefully this is a case where the other phone manufacturers will actually copy and you know, roll this out amongst other sort of phones as well, because, you know, frankly, something needs to be done, right? And this is quite a bold move to try and address that balance.
Definitely.
Thank you, Jav, for this week's
Billy Big Balls of the Week.
It doesn't matter if the judges were drinking. Host Unknown was still awarded Europe's most entertaining content status.
So it was. And that was only a few weeks ago, really, which just goes to show that, just goes to show how much time flies. And talking of time flying, what time is it, Andy?
It is that time of the show where we head over to our news sources over at the InfoSec PA Newswire, who have been very busy bringing us the latest and greatest security news from around the globe.
Industry news.
TikTok CEO addresses US security concern.
Industry news.
Software supply chain attack hits thousands of apps.
Industry news.
Hive ransomware upgraded to Rust to deliver more sophisticated encryption.
Industry news.
APT hacker group Bitter continues to attack military targets in Bangladesh.
Industry news.
North Korean hackers target US health providers with Maui ransomware.
Industry news.
Marriott plays down 20 gig data breach.
Industry news.
FBI and MI5 bosses warn of massive China threat.
Industry news.
Microsoft updates Windows 11 subsystem for Android to introduce support for VPN-assigned IPs.
Industry news.
Apple announces lockdown mode to protect journalists, human rights workers from spyware.
Industry news.
And that was this week's
industry news.
Wow.
Huge if true.
Huge, huge. Although 20 gig data breach apparently isn't huge.
This is the third time Marriott have been breached in five years. Four, 5 years? What is it? I mean, come on. There's that. What was it you're saying last week? It's good to have a breach every 3 years because it brings it back to the forefront of everyone's mind.
Yeah, but not three in 3 years.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, come on. That InfoSec program's not working.
Well, that's just... I mean, obviously, I'd have to click on the link to know more, and I'm damned if I'm going to do that. But it just seems to me that, you know, maybe because they were so easy to roll over the first time, the criminals just wait for them to pick themselves up and get back to business as usual and go, let's try it, let's have another go. And they're kind of like being, you know, constantly being punched by the school bully in the same place, even though the bruise is cleared up. It still bloody hurts, and it's still taking them out. And I'm wondering if it's, you know, a persistent set of attacks, or rather if it is just now incompetence.
Right. So take back, right? The whole thing back in the day, so much data went, right? You know, credit card information, you know, that original one from when they acquired Starwood Hotel. So, you know, yes. Huge amounts of data, and they got fined for it. And then they got breached again I can't remember if it was last year or the year before. But anyway, like, they keep losing personal data, right? So you'd think that they would have some type of controls in place. And don't forget, controls are there to not to deliberately or, you know, to necessarily always stop malicious people. You know, it's to stop accidents from happening as well, right? So in this recent case, apparently an employee at Baltimore airport got phished at the airport Marriott. And so they allowed someone to connect to their machine. And then that person who connected their machine exfiltrated this data, 20 gigs worth of data, right? And so Marriott tried to downplay it and said, oh, look, you know, there's non-sensitive business files that were taken. But then there were 400 people that had sort of sensitive personal information taken as well. And that includes full credit card details with CVV and expiry dates, and also HR files containing information on employees, right? But taking it back to what controls, you know, would you put in place? Bearing in mind, you have been, you know, sort of fined in the tune of millions of pounds already, you know, in different regions as well. Like DLP, right? You're looking for credit card data or PII egress in the network, okay? Why would they not have that control in place? And I get, you know, that you allow a certain amount of data to go out, you know, without stopping it because it may be BAU or it's an acceptable risk. But surely the details of 400 people is not something that should be allowed to go out without being flagged somewhere.
Yeah.
So when they said that somebody connected to the machine in the airport, does that mean they allow this person to plug in a USB?
Socially engineered, they state. So I think it was one of these, hey, it's me, Dave, from the IT help desk. Can you go to this site and run the executable?
Yeah, that probably makes more sense because it would take a while to copy 20 gig of data over, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and that's what I mean. It's, you know, but something must have flagged and said, hey, look, you know, there's sensitive data going out of the network.
I think it also plays to the fact of budgets because I know most hotels are still hurting from the pandemic and cash just isn't available and hotel hotel profits are razor thin at the best of time or Rizzler thin even
sure but so you lose 330 million guest data in 2014
yeah
then you lose 5.2 million. Guest data in 2020,
yeah,
along with employee logins. Surely at that point you're saying, look, you know, this is actually costing us more in fines to actually address the root cause.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I completely agree. I'm just trying to think nonsensical logic.
Now you're saying I completely agree once Andy's shown you what a farce your way your thinking was. And I'm like, oh, no, it's just no budget. There's no budget for this thing. They have razor thin profits. I mean, like the minibar, they're literally giving the stuff away on the minibar.
Are you all right? Have you had a stroke or something? I'm not sure.
I'm just saying, honestly, you're so full of shit, but that's what makes you a great CISO.
No, but what I was saying was the rationale that's being given internally is profits are too thin. We can't afford to spend all the money that we want. You know, we'll put other things in place like, you know, education and awareness and stuff like that rather than the expensive, you know, multi-million dollar DLP. We'll spend 10 grand on a PowerPoint and send that round. And the regulators will tick the box and we'll get away with it. That's probably the rationale as to why DLP hasn't gone in. That's not to say it's not true that what Andy's saying isn't true, because of course they're going to get hit with fines again and again every time they get hacked. But and the business is wrong in its assumption that, you know, we can't afford to do this because they can't afford to not do it now.
Wow, so many words to say absolutely nothing, but okay. Anyway, the other story that
sounds
my
like you
attention,
generally.
Yes, that it take the game recognizes game, my friend. That's what I always say.
Mind you, TikTok take all the words that you use in this podcast and you use them like 3 or 4 times elsewhere, you know, TikTok and you know, the Cron show or whatever it's called now, the Jerick show, that's it. You know, all that sort of stuff. So, yeah, that's fair.
Anyway, you had your little moan? After being...
I've had my little moan.
So, just one, a story that's near and dear to Andy and mine hearts. The TikTok CEO addresses US security concerns. And I fully agree with him. There is absolutely just like a witch hunt going on here. I don't know why they think, oh... The CCP is interested in finding out the US user data on their 14-year-old girls who are dancing to trends. I mean, it's just farcical. I think there's no basis on this. And
because those 14-year-old girls will be government employees in 10 years' time.
Well, this is what's that? Cruz, Senator Cruz. This was his old thing, wasn't it? About how TikTok, China's trying to dumb down Americans. By infiltrating, with their algorithms.
Well, it certainly worked with you two, up at 3 o'clock in the morning, still on TikTok. One more TikTok, one more set of jiggly boobs.
I pay attention. When it tells me to go to sleep, I go to sleep.
And then wake up
I do
and carry
everything
on.
That app tells me to do. but you know, I mean, this is so the whole argument was about whether or not the data sits in China or not. So, right, basically, if data sits in China, then the Chinese government can read it, okay? And they have the resources to do that. And they will do that, and they will profile it, and they will do everything. But, I mean, this is exactly what Facebook's doing to US data.
Yeah, it is, absolutely.
This is exactly what, you know, they're doing with Instagram, Meta, you know, Facebook, all your Oculus Rift stuff. You know, you've got to use Facebook login to use Oculus Rift. It's like, if you think that companies are not doing this, then, you know, you're pretty dumb.
But the difference is, though, is that Facebook is an American company and they can control that. They can change regulation, they can control, and if it comes to it, they will send armed soldiers into data centers to secure servers if they have to. They can't do that with China.
No, all you do, you'd have a set of good old boys who are told that, you know, that the government's there to, you know, steal their guns or take away their rights or, you know, give women the right to vote on their own bodies. And, you know, those data centers will be manned by patriots sort of to fight back. It's, you know, I don't see why the US think they're any better than China.
They're going to take away our Minecraft crossbows if we don't stop
exactly.
them.
Yeah.
They're not any better, not at all, but they have more control over the US companies than they do over the China ones. That's what it comes down to.
This is like that Spider-Man meme, you know, where there's Spider-Man pointing to Spider-Man.
Yeah. I mean, you know how much love I have for Facebook, let's face it. And I think TikTok is the lesser evil here, without a shadow of a doubt.
Exactly. I happily submit my data to China.
Yeah, something win-win.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, dear. Excellent. That was this week's...
Industry News.
If you work hard, research stories with diligence, and deliver well-edited, award-winning, studio-quality content for high-paying sponsors, then you too can be usurped by three idiots who know how to think on their feet. You're listening to the award-winning Host Unknown podcast.
Right, we come crashing to the end of the show, and it's the part of the show that we call...
Tweet of the Week.
And we always play that one twice.
Tweet of the Week.
So I shall take this one home with a tweet which, Tom, you shared. It just kind of put a smile on my face when I saw it. And it is from Alex Bursan, and it says... Back in 2012, Ubisoft accidentally added everyone as CC on a marketing email. Long story short, someone hit reply all, and 10 years later, the email thread is still going strong. And I think that's beautiful. And he includes a screenshot of the email. I mean, we've all been there, right? You know, where you get this email and it's like, you know, someone replies unsubscribe, and then someone else says, please stop replying to all. And then yeah, someone comes back 5 hours later and says, please remove me from this list. And then someone else says, please stop replying to all. Just classics, right? You know, those things. And they typically die off after a couple of days. But he's included a screenshot from, you know, when he looked at it at the weekend. And it's like one of the replies in it actually says, since this thread started, I've gotten married, had a child, gotten divorced, gotten remarried, and become an executive at redacted company name. And, you know, someone else says, hey, I had my first child yesterday. I hope everyone's been well over the last decade. God, I'm so tired. And it's like this 10-year thread of just, you know, the only thing they have in common is being Ubisoft customers.
It's a forum, right?
It's basically, it's, yeah, with a lot of bounce backs, I'm guessing. With
yeah, a lot of exactly. Bounce backs. A lot of bounce backs. Wow. And a really long thread.
Yeah. But 10 years. I mean, this is up there with the Billy Big Bull.
I love it the is, banality it of it as well. You know, the stuff that's sort of being mentioned in there was... Was it somebody said they had their gallbladder removed recently? And, yeah, oh, your gallbladder didn't deserve you, or blah, blah, blah. Yeah. It was, and it's just, it has just become, well, it's going to become the new Facebook.
Yeah. So someone said, it's nice to see this thread still going after all these years. I hope you're all living your best lives.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. It's lovely. It's lovely. Oh dear.
I want to be looped into it. If anyone can add me to it, loop me in.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And you're going to get it, and the first thing you're going to reply is unsubscribe.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, I wonder how many people sort of said, hey, I'm leaving my, you know, over the years, I'm leaving my job. Can you add my new email instead?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Or forwarding it onto their personal address.
Yeah.
Oh dear, that's brilliant.
No, this reminds me, Andy, you're the one that holds our archive or records because you don't delete anything, unlike me. But it reminds sometimes every now and then, like you haven't done it for a while, but you find an old email chain that the three of us were exchanging about yeah, something, and like you say, hey guys, look what I found. And I'm like, oh my god, why does that still even exist?
delete.
Yeah. I need like the equivalent of you know, lockdown mode for when I die.
No, yeah, we need lockdown mode for you.
Enron protocol.
Yes.
Yeah.
Bury my hard drive with me.
Yeah, that's right. You prize it out of your cold, dead fingers.
Yeah.
Oh, excellent. That was this week's...
Tweet of the Week.
Well, it was tough going. It was an extra half hour than we intended to spend recording. But we made it. We made it. I can't believe we did. The technology issues aside, the thing is still recording, which is always good. So, yes, thank you very much, gentlemen. Jav, thank you so much for your time today.
Yeah, whatever. Thank you very much for your time today. Being all, you're like Conor McGregor, giving it all the loud in the beginning and afterwards, like, it was just business, brother. It was just business after getting knocked out by Khabib.
And Andy, thank you so much for your contributions today.
Stay secure, my friends.
Stay secure.
You've been listening to the Host Unknown podcast. If you enjoyed what you heard, comment and subscribe. If you hated it, please leave your best insults on our Reddit channel.
Worst episode ever.
r/smashingsecurity.
That was a marathon, not a sprint.
It was.
It was, yeah.
And hopefully, Jav, your trip to the doctors this morning was for your blood pressure.
No, just like, but I am having my...
You're an angry, bitter man is what's coming across.
What? Come on. I'm the most chilled out, laid back person I know. And like, you know...
Really?
It's yeah.
You don't know many people then,
do
you?
No, I don't.
Mate, you're not even the most chilled out, laid back person on this call.
No.
I mean, you're definitely in the top four, but you're not.
Oh, just always missing out on that podium position.